While everybody else are walking in, I wanted to say a few more comments about this Schrödinger equation that we're trying to solve and that you will be solving for the homework. So we had agreed that we would try to obtain a solution from the left, which we call phi L here. And then we might be, or we had decided that we also needed to get a solution from the right, because whenever we went into either region 1 or region 3, then we would have to integrate in that direction, right? And then we had introduced a matching point. For practical purposes, if this here was, if we had an energy that was maybe here, which was our trial energy, we were trying to see if that could be an eigenvalue or not. Then we said that this point here, we could choose that as the matching point. And then we decided that since we had an overall phase factor here and over there that we had introduced, they could be different. So actually, what we said was that we should modify perhaps phi L, and we should set it equal to the value it had before, but then multiplied basically by this ratio, which would be the value of phi r and phi l, the ratio of that in the matching point. So that, by the way, would assure that our right function and left function, they have the same value in that point, right? Then our matching criterion here, we said that, well, we're not done yet, because I need then to look at the derivative from the right in the matching point, and then I subtract the derivative from the left in the matching point. As I said that the other way around, right? But we have to match the derivatives here. And if you look in the homework here, then we actually here divide by the value that the function has in the matching point. What I want to tell you here is that when you play around with this exercise and you try to get it to work, it's a little bit finicky, because there's nothing here which is carved in stone. You have quite a bit of liberty to do whatever you please. And you can see, as we were discussing yesterday, the wave function will actually at some point start to develop nodes, and that means that we have another eigen solution that we're trying to approach. So some of these criteria here may be diverging suddenly, and that would correspond to the case where the wave function had developed another node. So first of all, the matching point, if it turns out that this year is not really working for you, then of course you can also try the other one over here. And that would be problematic, or how could this be problematic to do this or to take that point? Well, in this case, first of all, the well is totally symmetric. The idea with the program that you're developing or that you will be developing is, of course, that it should be working also for asymmetrical wells. And it could be that the nodal structure of the wave function would mean that looking over at a matching point over on the other side of the well would be better for the eigenvalue that you're trying to determine. You could also perhaps move it in a little bit. You don't really have to stick with precisely this boundary. The other thing here is that you could say, well, if I do this scaling factor here, then why would I what I really need to divide here by phi r. So I could actually also look at something which would just be this one. And both of these criteria, it's going to give you some curves. And what you're looking for would be the zeros of these curves. It's not going to be the same function here. You can sort of play around with it and see what would work the best. The only thing you have to remember when you're trying to get it to work is think about the underlying physics, right? You know already quite a bit about this. You know that there's going to be some wave functions, and they will have nodes. And try to think about what that would mean if you're taking a rescaling factor like this. So what I'm doing here is I'm setting phi L to take on the value of phi R. I could, of course, have done it the other way around. I could have forced phi r to be equal to phi l. So if you get stuck and it doesn't come out with the eigenvalues that you want, try to figure out why that is. In particular, make good plots here of f of e, and maybe try another criterion and move the matching point slightly. OK. So I want to tell you a little bit more about some other problems that we can solve here. So there's a classic example here. So we could try to solve Laplace's equation in 2D. So when I write it, my potential here is called U. So we're looking for a solution of this form here. The problem that we want to look at is, again, boundary value problem. So we're trying to determine the electric potential inside a cavity. And this is actually a problem that's in a great many books. So we can even crank out the analytical solution. And maybe we'll do that if we feel up to it. So here we're taking a square, and we can call that square to be L by L. And we want to put in a coordinate system here, which is x and y. And then I want to go up here, and don't ask me how, but I set the potential to be 100 on that side here, and then 0 and 0 and 0 here. And then what we want to know is what is the potential inside this cavity, right? So we'll talk about the analytical solution. But for the moment, I just want to show you a very simple finite difference scheme here for solving this. And it's simple enough that you might actually have been doing that for some project elsewhere. But it illustrates something kind of neat. So again, what we do is that we got just go back and remember what we learned about second and first derivatives, right? So when I look at the second derivative here of my u with respect to x, then I could probably say that this was x and then plus delta x here in y and then plus the function in x minus delta x and then y and then minus 2 u of xy. And this we likely want to divide here by delta x squared. So if I do the same thing here for the y coordinate here, then things, of course, don't change, right? So I have the same expression, but now in the y variable. And then minus 2u xy. And this here. OK, so we know here that we know the errors that we commit when we do something like this, right? I was going to tell a joke, but do that some other time. Okay, yeah, so we want to put this together and basically solve this equation. Yes?
Should that be minus?
Yes, one? Yes, yes, yes. It's, if you see something that looks like an error, it probably is an error. So if you stick your nose very close to the blackboard, it's actually hard to see what you're writing. So sorry about that. So not all that innocently, I could choose to make the stepping in my x and the y direction the same. In this case, you can see that the underlying differential equation appears totally isotropic with respect to x and the y direction, so probably this here is safe. Later on, if we have time, we might look at differential equations where this might not be so innocent. But for the moment, let's just assume that this is right. So if I look at this, then I can just pile everything together. And then I could say here, well, if I look at this, then I get something like this, minus delta, and then y, and then plus u of x, and then y plus delta, and then plus u of x, and then y minus delta. And then I'm going to get minus 4u of xy. And this is going to be equal to 0. So I multiply through with my delta squared, right? OK. So where would that take us? So what we can do here is I can employ a trick. And the trick is very simple. I'm just going to take that term and move it over on the other side. So I say here that this is a quarter. And then u of x plus delta here, y plus u of x minus delta, and then y, and then plus u of x, y plus delta, plus u of x, y minus delta. OK. So this doesn't seem like a clever idea. But it actually is, because I could try to iterate this. And sometimes this is called Jacobi's method. So how would we interpret this as something that we could iterate? Well, I would take u here. And so that would be the entire potential inside this grid that I've introduced. Right? So we do some grid here, and the spacing is now delta in either direction. So I could say, well, OK, I update now the grid here. By saying it's basically a quarter times the sum of the four neighbors. and then plus u of x and y minus delta. Okay, and then I should put a little index here, k, k, and k. Obviously, if this here will converge, if somehow I iterate and u of k plus 1 is almost or becomes identical to uk here, then we arrive at some u star here and x of y here, which is precisely equal to this, right? So if we can get this here to converge, then we're happy, because that would mean that u star here is a solution to the equation that we're looking for, right? So that sounds very simple, and it turns out that this works very well. There are a couple of things that I need to say with this. The first thing here is you might actually wonder, well, is this here, does this make any sense at all? So we could look at the stability. Right? So if we here assume that u of k here in any point, if I take the absolute value of that, and I assume that this is less than or equal to some constant that I call alpha, right? Then I want to look at what value I can get for the potential at my next iteration. So, well, it would be a quarter here, and then x plus delta, y, and then plus the other four terms here. But you can see that this, I can then say, well, that has to be less than or equal to basically alpha plus alpha plus alpha plus alpha. And if we count, right, there are four alphas, and that will precisely cancel the factor of 4 here. So this here is equal to alpha. Something like this is actually really useful. You can see that this little argument here was entirely simple to develop. And it will assure you that you can't get runaway potentials. So no matter, this is actually incredibly a relief, right? Because it means here that I, inside the potential, inside the cavity, I need to start off my iteration. So I would need to set the potential inside the cavity to some initial value. What this here proves for us is that I can take any value. It doesn't matter, because it's not gonna be able to develop a divergence. So there's no, sometimes with iterative methods, they become very tricky, because if we're not somehow close to the solution, it's not gonna, it can actually shoot off and go off to infinity, and we'll never actually get a solution. So Jacobi's method here is very stable. You were?
I suppose you probably don't want to pick zero, though, for everything?
Yes. Zero would be a good starting point.
It would.
Yes. And that would actually be the typical starting point. So we have to look, so we have to look a little bit about how we would do this. So the first thing is that this here, I want to write this. And there's sort of a little drawing that we, yes?
Using the means we, this problem solves the minus L over 2 to L over 2 boundary condition, right? Not 0 to L. If you use this formula, because if you have y of y minus delta, and if you are increasing that, and then we should work with minus L over 2 to L over 2.
I'm not entirely sure what your question is, but I haven't told you how we're going to put in the boundary conditions. And I'm going to tell you that right now. So maybe ask me again in 2 minutes. So what we want to do here is I can draw a little diagram for this one. So you can see that if I indicate my value with an open circle for the iteration at k plus 1 here, then it's a sum of these four neighbors, right? So we take these 4 points here, sum them, divide by 4, and then I get a new point here. So to your question, we have a grid here on the boundary. So there are some points here on the boundary. And the points up here would correspond to 100. And the points here, they would correspond to 0. So to talk about the boundaries here, if I have whenever x is equal to L for any y. What? Was it actually snow?
Just for a moment, just for a thing.
It's
raining.
It's got now.
I thought it was my boundary conditions.
No!
So the other one here is, of course, this one. And then x equal to 0, and then y. Then I should put a comma here between them. Y here of x, and then y equal to 0. These are kept fixed. So if we do go ahead and then initiate everything there is inside here, if I set that equal to 0, then the value up here is still kept fixed at 100, right? So the points that we would be updating are only the interior points. Does that answer your question, right? So you know that you fix this to 100, and these points you fix to 0, and you never change them. So if we hadn't put 100 here, if I put 0 there, then the solution would actually have been 0 everywhere, right? Yeah.
Points with this situation is like the top left corner and the top right corner.
Yes.
And like the way you've discretized it, you don't really have to worry so much because you're always in the interior, so that you don't have to specify the corner points anyway. But like when you shrink the delta x, like the solution should start getting
better. Yes. So there's something that we have to worry about here. So I believe that you're actually going to do this little iteration for the tutorial tomorrow. You can study in all gory detail what will happen at those points. That's the idea here, that we only update the interior points. And that's how we satisfy the boundary conditions. They're always satisfied, right? And whatever I take inside, I can just put any value. And it's actually amusing if we if you have a program or graphics that can do a 2D sheet, you can follow the solution under these iterations, and you can start it off in some totally weird configuration, and then you can see how it quickly relaxes and actually corresponds to basically a solution that is entirely smooth. It's going to give you sort of the equivalent of a Saran wrap, right? So whenever you put something in the fridge, right, you're stretching over some singularities, and that's what you're going to get here. But I want to say, sometimes you think about, well, okay, how should I actually do this? And I sort of, you can do this iteration here in various clever ways, and I want to just recommend something that is fairly fail-safe, right? So I would take two arrays here. So I would take maybe U old here, and then over here I would take U new, and again it would only be the interior points that we would be updating. So I would take a point here, and that would be my new point, and the way I would get that is that, well, it's sitting here. So I would get it from that, and that, right? So I take the sum of these 4 points, divide by 4, and then I stick it into an entirely different 2D array. And I sort of sweep through this until this is full. And then I interchange these two. Obviously, you could say, well, you know, why bother having two arrays here? Why can't I just go through the lattice and sort of apply this update rule here at every point? Now it is snowing. Oh, dear. Suppose you say, well, I just want to save some space here. I just want to forget about this. And I just want to go through my two-dimensional lattice here. And then at every point, I substitute the value, which is just the average of the four neighbors. What would happen? What?
Going through and trying to take an average, and then replacing it, except you're going to use a replaced value to calculate a future average.
Yes. So you could actually try that when you write the little program, because it's so simple. The problem is if you do get too clever and do something like this, then this argument will go out in the out the window, right? So for an updating scheme where I just take a point here and then I update it, then some of the neighbors might just have been updated as well. And that means that I can't really apply this argument here, and I could get sort of runaway points where, or the whole solution could shoot off to infinity. The other thing I want to say here, that this is sort of amusing, that this discrete Laplacian, it gives us precisely a factor of a quarter here. So this a quarter here is precisely the stability limit, because if it hadn't been 0.25 but 0.251, then this didn't hold anymore, and it could blow up. And it actually likes to do that. So sometimes you can just, it doesn't really connect up to this Laplace equation, but you can just test your iterations here. If you go in and instead of the quarter put in epsilon more, the potential inside here will rather quickly just diverge, and nothing will work anymore. So it's amusing that this here is a limit of stability, if you like. So enough with that. Somebody already alluded to the problems here. So I can solve this. So if I assume here that my solution u of x is y here, what would I do with it? How can we solve this problem? Yes, so we can, solve it. I don't know, whenever I separate y variables, it's called x of x and then y of y, right? Are you all familiar with separation of variables? So I'm just going to skip the tedious solution. It's not very interesting, but if we do this, then we, of course, arrive at a solution here, which is just a sum here of n equal to 1, 3, 5, and then 400 over n pi, sine of n pi over Lx, and then a sinh here of n pi L over y, and then a sinh over n pi. So what would you say about this solution? Since you already tried summing series for the tutorials, does this look like it's a neat? Yes, yes. If I wrote it correctly. Oh, sorry. Yes, X is here. Yeah, it's. So the boundary, it's always going to be sine here because I'm going from 0 to 0. And then it's going to be a sinh here because I'm going from 0 to a finite value. I'm going to get a sinh in the y variable and then a sine in the x variable. The problem is, of course, that this looks nice, but it may actually be quite a bit more work to evaluate that reliably than doing the iterative scheme here. The point here is that this may not be smooth. And this is sort of a total classic, so some of you may have played around with this, and some of you already pointed out that, in these corners, we have a potential which is jumping. And effectively, what we're doing here is that we're constructing something that looks like a Fourier series. So what do we know about Fourier series around singularities?
They no longer match the true solution perfectly.
They tend to develop these.
They tend
to develop these bumps here, and they're going to be sort of problematic because unless you're incredibly clever, you're going to have to cut this sum here off at a finite value. So you're using a finite Fourier series. Whether it's my iterative scheme here, it's not going to have those problems. In many cases, you might actually say, if I look at a given interior point, I'm not going to get precisely the precision I could get with an analytical solution. But close to the singularities, I get something that's much more usable. The other thing is, of course, that if you're looking at the electric field inside a cavity, then you're going to have an experimentalist that's going to tell you, oh, by the way, my cavity, it looks like this. and try to separate the variables then. If you can get the serious solution from a separation of variables for a problem like this, then you're better man than you. So, and of course, I can stop making dents in this, and you can probably see that you're how you would obtain these solutions with the iterative scheme. It's fairly straightforward. But then let's get really clever, right? So so we say, well, okay, I could actually solve Laplace's equation here, and I could do that by iterating some 2D array. So why don't I try to solve a sort of a more general problem here? And that's actually Helmholtz equation. So I could look at the Laplacian, and then I could add f times u here, and then I could say, well, this should be equal to g here. Why not? So if I use the ideas that I had before, then you can see that we get something that looks very familiar. So I want to develop a finite difference equation.
Is that a function applied to u, or
no? It's just one. It's not f of u here. It's just f times. Not a convolution. So if I do this, you can see that, well, I would have to discretize again my Laplacian, just as I did before. So I could say, well, I would get some u, and my, now my discrete grid here, I'm just going to call it uij, right? Just because writing out all these arguments, it sounds rather cumbersome, right? So I would have u of I plus 1, and then j, and then plus u of I minus 1, comma j, and then plus u of I j plus 1, plus u of I j minus 1. And then I would have minus 4 here times u I j. That would be the Laplacian after I multiplied through with basically what we called delta squared before. So I need then to add my, so let's call this delta squared here. Then Fij multiplied by Uij, and this should be equal to Gij. Okay, so now things, it looks a little bit murky. And probably if I try to look at some kind of stability criterion like this, then I couldn't really prove that iterating this would work. So what we can say here is that we can write this as a matrix equation. And I'm not going to write out the details with the boundary here, because it'll just obscure what's going on.
That's when you
yes, yes, there's a delta squared here. It's just hiding behind the black one, right? So I'm going to look at this, and then I'm going to say that I'm going to take all my interior points here on this grid, and then I'm going to stack them up in a vector. And however you stack them up, it's up to you, right? But perhaps we could say that we had some ui minus 1 j here. Well, actually, let me write it ui plus 1, ui minus 1. Then maybe I want to do ui j, ui j minus 1, ui j plus 1. OK. Then eventually, this here is going to be equal to a vector where the uij here, it'll match up with delta squared. Well, actually, we can pull out the delta squared. So I'll put it there. G I plus 1 here, j, and g I minus 1, j. G I j minus 1, g I j plus 1. And then if we, for the moment, forget about what happens at the boundaries, which would just mean that you're at the start of your vector here, it won't include all the values because we're going to have to assume that they're fixed, then basically you can see that this here, I could then obtain by putting a 1 here, 1, and then a minus 4 plus delta squared Fij, right? And then a 1 and a 1. And then along this line here, everything else would be 0. And then whenever we get to the boundaries here, then it's not going to look as neat as this, but it can be done, right? So I would say, well, OK, actually, if I have discretized this, I just have a set of linear systems. Yes?
So you could do that with the old problem, too, right? And just a bunch of 1 over 4s everywhere.
Yes, even simpler. You don't. It's not depending on your boundary conditions, it's not going to be diagonal, right? So you're going to, it's not going to be symmetric. But you know, if you just take the Laplacian and the discrete Laplacian with periodic boundary conditions and diagonalize it, it's going to come out to give you basically eigenstates of the translational operator and so forth. So there's a lot of analysis that you can go in, and if you're depending on your boundary conditions, you're going to end up with something that's symmetric where you know that you can construct the basis of eigenvectors and so forth. Then you can analyze this as much as you'd like, right? What I'm saying here is that if you're constructed, and I sort of kind of like this, that you have a differential equation, actually a partial differential equation. We go through some finite difference form, and I end up with some with a set of linear equations that I have to solve. So if I can solve linear equations, I can do anything. Yeah. It means zero. It means that if I want to obtain what is over on this side, it doesn't involve the part of the vector up here, so I would have to multiply it by 0 under the ordinary matrix vector modifications. This becomes when you reach the boundaries, it's not going to look as neat as this, but I hope you can see that it can be done. We could say, I can actually pull out a routine that can solve linear equations, and I can use that for solving partial differential equations. And we're going to be talking about solving linear equations a little bit. You could then say, well, what about the other way around here? I could say that here I had an iterative solution, and maybe I could sort of interpret that in terms of my linear equation, and maybe that could lead me to believe that there would be ways of solving linear equations which were based on iterative means. Indeed, that's the case here. So we can perhaps, if this becomes too big for ordinary standard methods, then maybe I could solve this by iteration. So I can sort of go back and forth and look at it. So we'll look at these methods hopefully in not too long. I think I'm gonna. Where should I? So I just want to say two words about if we're talking about these partial differential equations, I want to say a few words about a different form.
Sorry.
Yes.
Is there any reason why we don't just iterate the solution to this like we did for the case?
Well, what I was saying here is that we
would can't show this, but can we just try it and see if it doesn't work?
Sure.
Which shows for most cases.
Sure. Unfortunately, by in many many cases for real problems that you're confronted with in physics, you're going to end up with something that's called self-consistency, which is basically another word for the fact that we want to iterate something until we reach convergence. And there are no good ways of figuring out when it's going to work. It could be horribly slowly converging. And basically, the intuition is always that your starting point somehow has to be reasonably close to the point where you want to get. So iterating to a self-consistency, if you don't have good rules like this, it requires a way of obtaining a good initial estimate. And sometimes that's possible, because it could be that you could actually solve the problem under a given set of boundary conditions. Maybe there's some small interaction that you can switch off. You could say, I could start with a solution which would be setting this term to zero and that to zero, then I would have the Laplacian. I could feed in the analytical solution and then cross my arms and legs and hope that that somehow would have been close enough that then additional iterations would be working. But basically, schemes like this, it's only going to pan out if you know enough to get reasonably close to the actual solution. If you could solve that in general, we would be a long way ahead in many areas of physics. I just wanted to say so solving partial differential equations, there's a lot of literature about this, and you can go out and you can pull out big monographs on it, 1,000 pages, and they'll tell you all the details. So I'm not really going to be able to do this area justice here. I just want to say, if we have a heat equation, so another very familiar, or it turns out if you look in mathematical physics, there's a finite problem, a number of problems that you can solve. So all the books, they do the same problems. So we looked at the Laplacian inside a cavity here. The other one that I really like, since we're watching the snow come down, is sort of an infinitely thin rod here. Somehow, we put it at 100 degrees Celsius here, and then we isolate it, and then we put snow here at the ends, or whatever you want to call it, when we fix the temperature to zero at the two boundaries. So it's not supposed to have any direction or any extent here in the y direction. And basically, so if I look at the temperature distribution, then I know that at x equals through here at t equal to zero, then it's 100 inside here. And then I know the two boundaries here, which are going to be zero. So we want to look at the equation that governs the evolution of the temperature here. So it would be some form of the heat equation. So I'm just going to assume that there's some constant here that for the moment we'll just call that alpha. So we have an equation of this form that we want to write a finite difference scheme for. So if we do this, then I have to discretize this operator, right? So that's not very hard. So I can just do the simplest thing that we talked about, which was this sort of asymmetrical derivative, and we know that's probably the one with the lowest position. If I look then at the second derivative here in terms of x, then we do what we did before. So I get t of x plus delta x here in t plus t of x minus delta x in t, and then minus 2xt here, 2, right? And then this I want to divide by delta x squared, right? So basically, when we discretize whatever we have over here, then I can write it as t of x and then t plus delta t here, t of x and t minus that, right? And this is going to be equal to something that I want to call eta, and then t of x plus delta x of t here plus t of x minus delta x of t, and then minus 2 t of x t. Okay, so eta here, that would now be my what I call alpha before, but it has to be multiplied now by delta t and then divided by delta x squared. So if we go back to the Laplacian, the underlying differential equation was nicely symmetric in x and y. Unfortunately, here we're going to see that this here should raise an alarm signal for all of you, because the equation, the t dependence and the x dependence is not the same. So we would have to worry about this. So one thing that you can see from this here is that if I go in and I set this up on the computer, then I could say, well, I want to get higher precision. How do I get higher precision? Well, I could decrease delta x. But oops, you can see here that if I decrease delta x, I would have to decrease delta t by the square of that, right? And so typically when you're now perhaps setting up some scheme for solving that equation, you have to be very worried and carefully look at what happens if you change your discretization in the time and the x direction. You have to do that somehow in the same manner. So we have to look at this here, and you can see that the t plus delta t, it only occurs here. So I can sort of do what is called a matching or stepping method. Yes.
Why did we choose to go with the one-sided approximation of?
That I'm going to tell you tomorrow. Basically, the answer is that if you had gone down to t minus delta t, then you would have problems starting your iteration. And I'm going to tell you a lot more about that tomorrow. So this is basically for convenience. We know that we lose precision doing this, but you can see that the scheme that I'll now tell you about is what we can do here is that I know the solution at t equal to 0, right, on some discrete points. And these discrete points are delta x apart. And then if I take this equation here and just move my xt over on the other side, I have an equation here where I can step one step forward in the time direction. Right? So I can then get the solution for t equal to delta t, right? And that's hence the name that we're sort of doing a matching solution here. And you can see that the what we would be using here is I would basically take these, the point here, the point there, and the point there, and I would combine them in some way, and that would give me that point, right? So if this here is x, and then x plus delta x, and this here is x minus delta x, then it's no longer going to be an isotropic average of these three points, because I have my parameter here, which is eta. So it's not going to look as neat as it did for the Laplace equation, but it gives me a perfectly valid scheme then for stepping forward. So I can try to obtain that the solution at t plus one, and I can only do that because I did this trick here. Had we used the higher or better approximation, then I would have needed the solution also one step back. So basically, you try to massage these finite difference equations around until you get a workable scheme here. Had we gone to higher order, then I would have needed some way of getting the solution also at t plus delta t, vaguely familiar with what we did with the Schrodinger equation, where we set it to 0 somewhere, and then we set it equal to a small number. But that's not going to be nearly as obvious here, and how we would get rid of that small number. So I'll tell you a lot more about that tomorrow. The things that I wanted to tell you about for these partial differential equations is that, first of all, there are these iterative schemes that if you can prove that they converge, they're kind of neat. They have a nice connection with linear algebra. And if you're stuck with these asymmetric partial differential equation, you're always going to have to worry about things like this. But the underlying idea whenever you do this is always try to develop some finite difference schemes. And sometimes they come in very, very clever disguises. And I'm going to have to run out of here right now, so thanks a lot, and I'll tell you a bit more about differential equations tomorrow.
Yeah. From the transportation.